Hey, Stan, let's talk about define cosmic conspiracy, because again, you know, you and I have been labeled conspiracy theorists for decades, but now we're talking about the culmination of so many things that have been written about by you, me, others individually. Let's talk about cosmic conspiracy, why you chose that title, and then we'll get into your newest research.
All right. Well, the cosmic part of it is, as opposed to a global conspiracy, it is a conspiracy of cosmological or universe-type proportions. It is one for control of the created world, or worlds as we see out there, everything. So cosmic was kind of the biggest conspiracy that could be, and that's why it's called cosmic.
Well, we're dealing now with so many aerial phenomena. We're seeing videos on YouTube of henceforth secret flying aircraft, if you can call them that, electrogravitic craft. We're seeing battles from outer space coming into inner space. We're seeing all these things. So let's get right into the book. Okay, when you first wrote Cosmic Conspiracy, obviously you were looking into the future. Now you've come up with some new revelations on the book of Daniel, and I'd like to get right into those, okay? And let's talk about the newest additions to Cosmic Conspiracy, especially your findings in the book of Daniel, because most people don't know, number one, you're a scientist. Number two, you're a commensurate researcher. And number three, there's a lot of false interpretation of the book of Daniel as it relates to this person known as the Antichrist, who appears on Earth at the time of major cataclysmic events that seem to be unfolding right now. So let's go into the meat of the matter, and then we'll work backwards from there.
All right. I suppose the best place to start would be in the overview of the book of Daniel. That book was written back 6th century, B.C., by Daniel when he was in the captivity of the Babylonians, and he was living in a suburb called Chaldea. And he wrote the book in at least two parts, separated by time, probably when he was younger and then when he was older. Various historians and translators have looked at his book and have said, well, the first two chapters are historic. They're already passed. I don't agree with that. I'll tell you why in a minute. And then the last 10 are prophetic of a sort, but in the Jewish community, in the rabbinical community, they say, well, it's not enough to make him a real prophet of God because he never talked to God directly, which, again, is incorrect because in the 10th chapter of Daniel, he's talking to a man who appears floating over the waters of the Tigris in front of him, who tells him various things in those two chapters about what he is to write, and the fact that it would be a coded book, a sealed book, until the time of the end, which is where we are now. We know that because of various other signs and prophecies to deal with the reformation of Israel and things like that. There were three people standing there, two angels on, kind of touching the ground, watchers they called them in those days, next to the river where this being stood above it in the air and glowed brightly, and his description matches perfectly the description given to the Messiah by John in the Revelation of John, years later, centuries later, in fact. Now, the important part about Daniel, among all the other books, is that Jesus pointed to him saying, as Daniel the prophet said. Now, Jesus was Jewish, raised Jewish, he was Orthodox, and when he raised Daniel to the status of prophet, it meant, pay attention, this guy is someone to listen to. He is a prophet. And so now, when I got into the second chapter, which was part of the eight verses, there were four verses in there, and I started to translate a couple of things to answer a lady's question that had been sent to me about it, I realized that there was greater depth in the translation of this that had not been exposed in the English version I had of the Bible. So I went online and I looked at a variety, about 15 different translations of the modern Bible for that very verse. And I found 15 different translations. I mean, some of them might only differ by a word or two, but others differ by a whole lot. So it tells you that when you're translating ancient documents, there's a little bit of poetic license to try to interpret it properly. And the reason that there's so much trouble with Hebrew and Arabic and Chaldean Aramaic, all those old languages, is that in the beginning, although they used vowels when they spoke, when they wrote down words, they wrote down only the consonants. You know, like if you're going to take the word line, L-I-N-E, they would just write L-N. And you're supposed to figure out from the usage of that word in that verse what they really meant. Did they mean line, loan, lane, et cetera, et cetera? You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Now, so when I realized that, I went back and I looked at the verses with a fresh mind saying, okay, now these four verses here deal with the clay and iron mixed toes on this image that King Nebuchadnezzar had dreamed and that Daniel had interpreted for him as being the progression of world kingdoms. And when I got to the portion of it where it was talking about the legs of this statue of the man that were made of iron, this was a latter day, at that time it was the kingdom of Rome and the two divisions of Rome, the Eastern and Western empires of Rome, represented by two iron legs, being strong legs, you know, like of iron, so that they would crush those that got in their way, which Rome did. But then the iron continued down into the feet and then got mixed with clay in the toes. So you had clay toes and some iron toes mixed together. It didn't say how many of these, but there were 10 toes. Now, until we reached the time where we are now, there was never another global empire like Rome until now, when we're setting up, or someone is setting up, a global world government. And it will be an empire. It will be a dictatorial structure. Now, strangely enough, as I pointed out in the Cosmic Conspiracy book in 1978, the first edition, I put on page 200, at the very back of it then, a map that the Club of Rome had devised to break the world into 10 kingdoms. They call it 10 regions. But each one would have a regional director. We would get rid of nation states. Now, that's the first time that we've seen in modern times a structure for a world government, a world order that had only 10 pieces to it, like the 10 toes in Daniel's interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Now, when I saw that and I realized, of course, now I was right back then, those are the 10 kingdoms, 10 regions. They're not to do with the European Union, because that has too many, you know, like 20 here and 14 there. It's not it. This is a global government that was prophesied. And it had been sealed because no one had information on the Club of Rome or the 10 regions or America, for that matter, back when Daniel was given this decision. So I started translating. Then I'd take a word and I would break it apart into its root meaning. I would see if the word was Chaldean or if it was Chaldean and Hebrew, which meaning should be taken in context of that statue. And piece by piece, and I mean piece of word by piece of word, I put together those four verses there plus four down in chapter 11. Chapter 11. But in this one that I was looking at, I realized something that I had only kind of made a public discussion here and there and hadn't really written fully in the book. So I included in the edition, the 2010 edition of the book, which is just released last week, I put in there about the connection of the Roman Catholic Church to the Roman Empire. And I thought it was very important that people realize that chapter 2 of Daniel is not purely historic. It is future tense in this, that part of it. And it is talking about those two iron legs of the statue of the guy. Those were the Roman Empire, okay? But they didn't stop. They didn't change to a new metal as it should with a new world order. They went into the feet with the iron before it got to the toes. And I remember, as you will recall also in prophecy, that it speaks of in Revelation of the end days when you will have one beast that was and yet is not, but yet is, the eighth one. And it was talking about an empire that was at the time that he was writing, but would not be, but then yet would come again. It wouldn't die, it just disappeared. And that's what happened to Rome. If you look at Constantine's thing here, when Rome became a quote-unquote Catholic nation, it moved as the heads of the Roman, deities, but the Roman, like governorship, it moved the heads of those into a church structure where you had archbishops that were over those areas and then bishops under that to administer beneath those levels. So what we saw was that the Roman jurisprudence, as it were, the Roman ideal, the Roman organization, just went underground into the Catholic Church. So that when the political Rome died, the whole structure kept on going, and they kept advising kings of all over, you know, in the Western, Eastern Roman Empire, and funding people to have wars. And the Catholic Church was really involved, just like it was the ancient Roman Empire, but behind the scenes with a religious hat on it. And I know this is not going to make a lot of people happy out there that are Catholic, but that's the way it is.
Let me interrupt you for something here, because in the last 6 months, Dan, and then we'll get right back. This is relevant. The Catholic Church has been basically changing even their historic theological and doxological view on aliens, okay? Obviously, the idea, and Malachi Martin, which used to be on Art Bell until he was murdered, I'm on record as saying he's murdered.
Yeah.
The fact is that it's almost like the Vatican has gone overboard through their different spokesmen and their astrophysicists, etc., to build the case for the aliens that the Space Brothers are on their way, and that there's room basically in the Catholic Church for them to come on board. Then we have the Lucifer telescope in Arizona that's at one of the most geologically important spots in the world of the occult, being called the Lucifer 1 telescope.
Now, who named it that?
Pardon?
Who named it that?
The group that funded it.
Wow.
And they're using Lucifer as an acronym. But the point that's incredible is that, and let's make this clear, this isn't a Catholic bashing thing. This is basically saying how the Roman world, as Daniel was given the revelation, split, and now pretty much behind the scenes has controlled the world pretty much in a stealth manner, and now the fact that they are the leading proponents verbally and in writing of alien disclosure, basically, I would say this, undergirds your premise of your study of Daniel.
Yes, they've become more and more active in trying to change, the times and seasons. They're working on that too in the church, the Catholic Church. But
right.
The core of the Catholic Church is the Roman Curia, or the Roman court, and that's where the power lies within the Catholic Church. But I'm afraid we're going to see a huge exodus from the Roman Catholic Church into the Protestant churches that are probably home meeting churches. They won't even be organized much, but people are going to absolutely lose faith in the Roman Catholic Church, you know, as the true representative of God here on earth. It's sad, but I can see that falling away occurring now.
Well, so, if the whole world's going after this coming one, basically Jesus said, he came and we received him not, but another will come, him we will receive. Antichrist means in place of the true Jesus Christ. It's really interesting. Stan, let me interrupt you for a minute. Hey, Todd, we're getting some people claiming that Stan sounds like he's talking in a barrel, and I don't know if you can do something to equalize that out or whatever. And if you can give me a little more volume to be able to hear Stan, I'd appreciate it. So continue on, Stan. I'm just trying to respond because obviously, you know, there are issues with the presentation of the show, just the sound quality, and that is what it is.
All right. Well, I don't know why it's doing that. I've adjusted everything I can on my side here.
Right.
Anyway, we'll continue and hope it worked out. You remember the Sheldon Neill group, the spiritual hierarchy of the Galactic Federation type stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, he's been putting out stuff, emails. I just got a copy of somebody got one yesterday, and getting all these people ready to accept the aliens as the true human ancestors and basically our creators and all that kind of stuff. Getting them ready, getting his listeners ready or his followers ready to endorse the first group that comes. And this is spooky, but that's the way it is. And you look at Dr. Greer, who's, you know, going to make full disclosure of the alien presence, force the government into it and all this, but he won't hear anything bad about the alien brothers. He's saying they're all good. He just does not get it. We have been warned, although kind of in coded terms, until now, we've been warned to watch out for the imposters coming. And You know, I put, it's the last paragraph of my book. I held up printing of it for 3 days last week. I said, look, I have to put this last verse from the Bible in there, from Matthew 24. I said, because if the people get nothing else from what myself and others have been warning them about, they have to know how to distinguish between the true Christ and the false Christ. And if you'll bear with me a second, I'll just read that from Matthew. There are four verses that are important there. Matthew 24, and then verses 23 to 27. And I'll read it. It says, then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is the Christ, or there, don't believe it. For there shall arise false Christ and false prophets, and they shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before, wherefore if they shall say unto you, behold, he, that meaning the Messiah, is in the desert, don't go there. Behold, he is in secret chambers, don't believe it. For as the lightning comes out of the east and shines even unto the west, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And this is important, because there's only one being that has the control of the technology necessary to let everyone see in a flash instantly, no matter where they are, whether they got a TV or not, that he is here and back and putting things in order. So that one thing, that one set of four verses there in Matthew 24 is something people ought to have written on a little card and stuck in their wallet to remember when we're challenged with alien beings that come and say, oh, we're here, yes, we were at crucifixion, now here's some videotape of it. Yeah, we're your creators. Look, here we are in this spaceship, or we're over here in this desert in Colorado and in the San Juan Valley or wherever. They are liars. They are liars because it validates exactly what was said in Matthew 24 there. Anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
And I think that's a critical point because, again, you've got Benjamin Krim and Maitreya, and we've got Obama and others that are filling specific prophetic roles. But the thing that I think is really critical, Stan, is that going back to the book of Daniel, Daniel is the quintessential time-sealed revelation. And I think people don't understand that in the book of Revelation, it's the revelation of Jesus Christ who is worthy to open the seals and reveal what the seals had held back until the specific time. And so now, as you and I are on the radio, and let's just put the date out there, this is the 29th of April, 2010, we are dealing with every day, we're dealing with people hearing shockwaves, seeing things that do not look like meteors or comets being blown out of the sky by plasma bursts, different factions, this is me speaking now, different factions of the U.S. military basically fighting with weapon systems that most people, even high-ranking military people, don't even know exist or may have heard it alluded to. And we're right in that time of the end, so it's so critical that the deciphering and that the understanding of the book of Daniel be brought relevant. Because, you know, again, I remember in college going through form criticism and text criticism and all that stuff, and I said, by the time you guys, meaning religious professors, get through explaining everything away, the only thing you can believe in is yourselves, and quite candidly, I know God and you guys aren't it. Needless to say, I did not do well in their classes. But what I'm, you know, to be booted out of some of those was, I'd say this, a hallmark of courage. But the point is that we're in a situation now where the very times are, the events are determining the times. We used to look for events and we look for timing associated with the events. Now the events are determining the times, and we are in a cosmic, there's no better word I know of either, conspiracy of Luciferian, and it's interesting, Lucifer's never been associated in a good way with good things, so for the Vatican even to name their telescope in Arizona that, I think is a tip-off. The fact that, again, Tom Horn has posted story after story after story on his website, Raiders Network News, about just the, if you will, the shooing in of the alien presence, that there are gods, there are saviors. I'm saying that little g and little s's, and that people who will resist them will be resisting God. You know, even the Pentagon, which basically my guess is there's going to be tens of thousands of computers listening to us tonight from that fact, that section or that factor of the world. And the thing is that they refer to these people as the gods of the Sumerians, and not people, entities. So now we've got, basically, we're going from the oldest recorded history the records and annals of prehistory right into the modern-day phenomenon, and people are saying, look, even over Bozeman, Montana, a woman, an eyewitness report said she saw something that looked like a 747 with molten lava dripping from it, being literally blasted out of the sky. And one of my friends who's listening to us tonight, you and I both know him as a very generous man, said, Steve, that's old technology. That's a propulsion system being melted down or melting down. So the point, I guess what I'm saying is that Jesus said there's going to be signs in the you know, sun, moon, and stars, distress on nations. And so now we're seeing all this stuff. And so when people used to laugh at you or laugh at me or any of us that wrote about the future, now they've got to consider something. They have no natural answer for what's going on. Continue on, if you would, with the book of Daniel.
All right. I was just checking that article on Lucifer's telescope there. And the acronym stands for, believe it or not, Large Binocular Telescope Near Infrared Utility with Camera and Integral Field Unit for Extragalactic Research.
Yeah.
Lucifer certainly sounds better than that.
I can't say what I want to say, but that's a nice way of saying BS, you know. They
know definitely.
Lucifer is, and I would think that of all the acronyms or acrostics they could have used, that's not probably the best one, especially if you're the vicar of Christ on Earth.
Absolutely. That is just weird. In fact, when you were just mentioning about that lady talk about the 747 stuff, molten, dropping out of the middle.
Yes, sir.
It reminded me of a report I got from two dentists down in Australia when I lived down there. They used to go hunting in the center of Australia near Hare's Rock, but they were this time a bit south of it, near the McDonnell Ranges. Anyway, they were in their Jeep out there in the middle of nowhere. You know, Australia, about 85% of it is nowhere, right? It's just deserts and stumpy trees and whatever. And they were out there amongst scrub bush and things that probably none of them any higher than about 4 or 5 feet. And they were sitting there in their Jeep. They stopped for a while before they got to where they were going to set up camp for the night to go hunting for the kangaroos. And he said they were sitting there, lights all off, it was getting towards dusk. And a 747 came flying in from Alice Springs, which is about 15 miles west of there, came in flying over close to them and then stopped in midair, a 747, and slowly descended straight down to the deck of the desert floor, and the floor opened up, it went down into it, and the floor closed over it, and it was desert again. Now they thought, well, this is reasonably interesting. So they got in their Jeep, and they were going to go have a look over where it was, and as they approached it, all of a sudden out of bushes, jumped armed soldiers with weapons saying, turn around and get out of here. And so they did, obviously. Now, that was back in, late 1980s. So it is old technology. And that was probably a plasma flame jet generator or something to generate the high voltage it needed to spin to get the field. But anyway, yeah, I agree with that.
Well, and I got to tell you something. When I used to be wild and crazy, and now I'm tame and sedate, I was going through the desert. Yeah, those of you that drive fast cars will appreciate this. I was blasting through the desert one night in Nevada, and I'll maybe fib a little bit. I was going faster than I'm going to admit to. But all of a sudden, something caught my eyes, and out of the desert floor off in the distance, and I was, trying to watch further down the road, and to make a long story short, out of the ground, just literally like an elevator, up comes the most strange flying platform I've ever seen, okay?
Yeah.
So when you're discussing Alice Springs, I think we better tell people about Alice Springs, too, because you're talking about one of the most top-secret underground city/bases in the world. And there's a reason why Alice Springs is located where it's located, and it has a lot to do with a lot of the ancient civilizations and a lot of the oral traditions, etc. And obviously, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who have seen the pictures of the ancient astronauts, and how do you pronounce the word I always pronounce wrong? I call it Wajina?
What? It's Wajina.
Wajina, okay.
Wajina.
Wajina. I used to really murder that term. But again, getting back to that, in Australia, it's the clearest pictographs, meaning rock pictures, in the world of giant, and I mean giant aliens, with basically space helmets on them, and they look like grays on steroids. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think that was over the majority of those really good carvings are preserved over here in Eden Valley in the west in the Kimberley Mountains region.
Correct.
But Uluru, or Ayers Rock, right where Pine Gap is, of course, is their most sacred center site for the Aboriginal nation. And so there are carvings there, too, in places. I talked to one older Aboriginal man when I was down in Perth, and he was telling me about when he was younger and being taken on walkabout, which the young men are taken on to travel the various pathways to learn the things of their history and where to migrate to for various food things during the seasons and to learn about medicines that they were taught by Wangina. Anyway, he was with a small group that were being taken on their walkabout, and they had paused for the night, stopped for the night to camp in the McDonald Range, which was just a few miles south of Pine Gap. It's not very far at all. And they were hidden down in there, shielded by rocks and things from the weather. And it was not that the weather was a big deal. But anyway, he said, we were there that night, and we hadn't even, eaten yet. And this bright light came flying over and stopped just within our view, so close that we could see the men who got out. He said, they must have been Kadachi men, the Kadachi meaning featherfoot. They didn't leave footprints because they didn't touch the ground. But he said they got out of their craft. And I think, as I recall, he said it was Officer Chase. But anyway, they went over with their rods and touched some of the rocks around there, and the rocks suddenly just heated up and glowed like they were from a volcano. And the men did something there while they were looking at it, and then they put their sticks back on their sides to hit this and went back into the craft and zoomed away. And, of course, he had heard from others about this. The general term for them is not Wangina, but Lightning Man. Because they come like lightning, bright and spark. So years later, he told me to tell me this. And he said, I know that you are investigating these, and we have these things coming and going in the west of our the federal territory for the Aboriginal nation in the center of the country. And he showed me where they come and go, with regularity during the day as bright, shining discs. And that's going back probably, 20 years ago, at least, that he told me that. But,
well, and again, Stan, we're now so far, even Bud Rich or whatever his name was, the former head of Skunk Works, I've quoted him on this show. People have written about his statement that the American people even found out how far advanced we were. Richard Hoagland talking about Phobos being hollow. I can tell you point blank from a four-star general and more than one that, the idea of Mars being a dead planet is as ridiculous as the fact that Phobos is truly artificial. So when you take the technology to create something that size, people that you and I both know by name have talked about even 40, 50 years ago, we had 2-mile-wide craft that could carry 5,000 men. And, I just got an email that's interesting, and I never noticed this, and my congratulations to Becky, who sent this to me. She said, Steve, I noticed on the latest Paris UFO footage, these UFOs seem to always be triangular and also remind me of the Ouija board planchette. Is there some reason for these three-sided pyramid shapes? If people don't realize, there's kind of a glass piece in the planchette on some of them. And the Paris UFO footage, the way these Tango Romeo 3 Bravos, Tango Romeo 3 Charlies, Deltas, and all the variations of the craft that exist, they always have, if you will, Stan, the globe, if you will, the orbital area of which the passenger compartment, you explained that at length one time on a show, but because of the craft's speed and its ability to cloak, etc. But I never noticed that. It's interesting that the triangular shape. Now, because
it's like a planchette, you're saying.
Yeah, it's almost identical to a Ouija board planchette.
Yeah, it is when I start to think about it, because that's right. You can see through the middle of that round part.
You got it.
You got the three-corner leg.
Yeah, I never noticed that. Becky, bless you. That's pretty astonishing. The thing that I think that is critical, though, to the time that we're on tonight, and ladies and gentlemen, I don't believe it's by accident. I've been off, Todd informed me tonight, I've been off the radio for 4 months with the exception of, I think, doing Coast to Coast. But the thing that's interesting is the timing of the release of your book, obviously us doing this show together, and we're doing the show not in a future reference to, hey, people, this is going to happen. We're doing it now as, hey, people, this is happening.
Yeah, I think this it starts is now, doesn't it?
Yeah. This is a quintessential no better word than that, totally relevant, pertinent, time-dated, time-specific warning, I believe, that you're given, and the understanding that God's given to you, the understanding that we're trying to share with people. This is it. This is no longer, you know, well, in 5 years the aliens are going to show up. No, 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 no. And then with Stephen Greer, and I think I would like you to explain to the listeners that didn't read your site or my site the story that, Holly, when you were interviewed by Stephen Greer, obviously your perspective as a scientist and as a believer, as a Christian scientist, he didn't want to hear that because your take on the aliens is totally different than his. Will you share that briefly?
Sure. While we still lived in Australia back in 2000, the Stephen had his, I guess, I can't remember whether he rang me direct or whether, I think he emailed me, and then I talked to his guy when we got to the States, but he wanted to take my testimony for his disclosure project, and he wanted to videotape it. So we said, all right, well, look, later in the year, we're due to fly up there to look at some property in Colorado. And he said, well, that's good. We have a place just outside Colorado, their private residence, where we can film you. In fact, it was just a few miles from NORAD. So in 2000, we flew up here to look at things. We stopped off, and his man was an airline pilot in real life, took us to this home and videotaped my testimony, which I, of course, explained about how I've been recruited by Edward Teller's group, been sent down to Australia and trapped there for a while when I disagreed with their overall policies and things like that. And I had Holly standing over the side in the room just for, I guess just for because I wasn't too sure about this weird guy then. I had her videotaping on our Sony video the whole process of me being interviewed, showing the interview of people and their cameramen and all that, and me as I was answering questions. It was a two-hour thing, and we still got the video of it, and time permitting, I will make that available to the public somehow, but the thing was that we spent all that time and Howdy's and Shook, and then left and went on about our trip and went on back home. And as time passed and he released his book and had his press conference in Washington, the big to-do, never heard from him, didn't mention my testimony or any portion of it at all. So I kept checking and finding out, getting no answers from his people as to why they didn't use it. And now then we see his true colors, which, you know, want us to kiss the ground that the alleged aliens are going to come and walk on. And he's not seeing them as potentially bad. I mean, for crying out loud, it's just the V series, for instance. The guy that wrote that, Kenneth Johnson, wrote it from a biblical perspective, believe it or not. And it's a fictional series, but in there are parts of the Bible hidden very cleverly, like even how the original aliens were disposed of, the original series V in his book. They were killed by the a dehydrated blood compound made from the blood of a human and alien hybrid, and that blood was spread across and killed all the bad guys, like the blood of Jesus was the covering, you know, would run them off from us. There was a parallel there, and they were the aliens in V, as you can see now, are lizards or serpents with an outer covering of human appearance, and that lizard dress and human clothing, you see. Johnson and us and a lot of people have been warning people any way we could, any way people would listen before this day, that this is what is coming. Get prepared to make a decision for who you're going to support. And we couldn't any of us wait until after they landed and officially and revealed to the world and appear to be nice people. We could not wait until then and then turn around and say, oh, look, don't believe this. This is a lie. Because people say, oh, you're just yelling sour grapes and trying to make, you know, prophecy fit current events. But we are ahead of the curve now. That's why all of us, Lynn Marzullo, myself, all kinds of people, Tom, yourself, Paul, we've all rushed to put this information before the public before it happens, so you know that the Bible is true, and it doesn't need to be bent to explain what's about to happen.
Right, and the scripture, surely the Lord God will do nothing except he reveals his secrets to his servants, the prophets. And the testimony of Jesus in Revelation 19:7, is the testimony of Jesus is a spirit of prophecy. You see, it's amazing, Stan. You know that when we talk about Jesus, people, I've got scientists, oh, you got to leave all that religion stuff out. I said, huh? Are you kidding me? I'm telling you about the most amazing person in the universe, he who created it all, he who warns us of it all, he who promises to deliver us from it if we put our faith in him, and you're telling me I'm not relevant? I said, then, sir, what is relevant in your world and in your existence? And basically, you know, Stan, we're dealing with now a world of unreality that's been pretty much, I believe, mind-controlled into all of us by the television. And I've done shows over the past 15 years on the science fiction themes and the memes of science fiction themes bringing us, preparing us, mind-controlling us to this point. And even the web bots and by the guy that's ahead of that, Cliff High, who absolutely does not like Christians, is talking about all the reptilians out there. I mean, his latest posting has everything to do with reptilians. In other words, and for those of you that are unfamiliar with Quetzalcoatl, the depictions of Quetzalcoatl is as a bipedal giant lizard, 12 feet tall, a lizard being, just exactly like the V-series. And that's who the Aztecs claim was their basically progenitor, the giant that came to establish their kingdom. It's interesting, too, isn't it, that all these things seem to like human flesh? In other words, I was telling somebody earlier, Stan, you'll appreciate this. I'll say one of the reasons why the current administration and all the Luciferians want all the guns taken away from the people, they don't want the people to be able to turn the lizards into lizard bait. They want basically us to be lizard salads. In other words, you know, smorgasbord. And I'm not kidding when I say that. Somebody just sent me an email saying, why all of a sudden does the government want salt out of our diet? Wanda, one of the listeners, and I thought, you know, that's interesting because a very prominent general, still active duty, told me one time, he said, the chemtrail spraying beyond what everyone else tells you, Steve, is the atmospheric conditioning bringing the planet back so that when these things basically become reanimated, reintroduced, that if the atmosphere is more what they're accustomed to, not the atmosphere that God created for his creation, us, his image bearers, to exist in. And I thought, now that's really interesting. Because look at what's gone on, Stan, just in taking place. Now, I want to get you back to Daniel, because I think it's critical. There are misnomers about the Antichrist, and continue on, because we got the next hour, too.
All right. Well, you know, one thing I thought I would add to what you were saying here about the giants and stuff, you know, the Sumerian gods. You remember in Enoch where they talked about the giants and the relationship to mankind? You remember reading that?
Say that again.
In Enoch, you remember where they were talking about the giants and their relationship to mankind?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, I put that in the book here, too. And all the others together with them took unto themselves wives, and each chose for himself one. Now, these were the watchers of the fallen ones. And they began to go in unto them and to defile themselves with them. And they taught them charms and enchantments and the cutting of roots and made them acquainted with plants. Sounds almost like they were making witches. And they became pregnant, and they bare great giants, whose height was 3,000 ells, E-L-L-S, who consumed all the acquisitions of men, and when men could no longer sustain them, the giants turned against them and devoured mankind. So that sounds like, you know, salt in the diet, maybe they didn't want their food too salty.
Right, and that's exactly what Wanda's bringing up. Or is it something that salt interferes with their, let's just say, this digestive tract of humans? You know, let me take people to a just kind of, because, again, we've got 2 hours. If they even think of a little child's nursery rhyme, fee-fi-fo-fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman, okay? I used to wonder what that meant until I was explained again in the world that I lived in for a number of years by those who hunt these things. That literally they hunt by DNA. And I did a show with Dr. Horowitz on everybody's DNA literally has a harmonic, et cetera. But did you notice, too, Stan, that in the nursery rhymes that people have just, you know, they say, oh, that's cute. Well, there's more to it than cute. The bottom line is that even in the book of Numbers, and this is why it's so important for people to read and understand when the Joshua and Caleb go in to spy out the promised land, and then the word of God declares that the land devours its inhabitants, that means your lunch, boys. In other words, they're not like opening up a box of giant Oreos, man. They're eating people.
You know, when they came back with the fruit, you know, the grapes and stuff that they got over in Canaan to show Moses, and they were afraid and saying, we're not, you know, we don't want to go there because they'll eat us. And the interesting point is that not only were the people giants, but the fruit was, the grapes were gigantic, which is interesting.
Absolutely. And again, now we're seeing all of the, every single story that's out in the transhumanist magazines and everything, it's basically, it all boils down to this, is something, some entity is trying to take the most beautiful creation in all of the universe and turn it into something ugly, whether it's a Borg, a cyborg, a mutant, a transmorphic demonic entity, a genoform, a genomorph, a shape-shifting pile of cosmic goo. The point is that it's so in our face. And, you know, Stan, I get excited now. I'm getting really wound up because Jesus said if he didn't shorten the days, there'd be no flesh left alive. That word flesh means us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I guess the thing is that we always think of that as, well, what could take away all the flesh? A bunch of hungry things being released that have been bound for a long time. That'd do it, plus all of the different things. And by the way, for those of you in the military, I'm warning you, and this is not a threat, this is for your life's sake. Beware of a multicolored or a new colored injection that they're going to be experimenting you on. I saw kind of an aqua blue thing, and I don't know why I'm saying this, Stan. I pray before we went on the show tonight, I pray that every ear that could hear would hear, every eye that could be opened, and instantly into my spirit dropped the thing, warn those, and I'm telling everybody this, there is something that they're going to try and inject, and, you know, it's like, if you will, it's the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde serum. And it doesn't turn you back into a nice guy. And I have had literally multiple confirmations from all over the world, from the scientific community, from the intelligence community, from the military community, basically saying, Steve, they are literally trying to morph specific soldiers into ITs, I-T-S, okay?
Yeah.
And ITs are coming for us's. And so the point is that there's the warning, gentlemen. Take it, and for everyone who's out there that is Christian, every time you hear Stan, me, Tom Horn, doesn't matter who, you take it to the Lord in prayer, and if those of you who claim you're Christians, you ought to know that Jesus said his sheep hear his voice. So you take it to the Lord, and you ask him whether these things be so. Because, Stan, there are going to be no participants, or forgive me, no spectators very soon. I don't know when, but I can tell you this. It seems that the timetable is like a bunch of sharks that have just tasted blood in the water. These guys have accelerated at light speed their plans to bring down the United States of America and literally to bring in everything that's been held back by the mercy of God, and I believe God giving this country and the world a space to repent. I think that it's noble to think that, you know, that you can vote the monsters out. Little do they know, it's the monsters that count the votes. So I don't think you're going to get rid of them by the vote. I believe by the active intervention, supernaturally, of a miraculous loving God, and I mean that in time and space, based on the same precedent as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel in the lion's den, and delivering all who put their trust in him. That's the thing. And by the way, I'm not a pacifist. So if something comes to eat me, I intend to turn it into sushi before it turns me into lunch.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You know, it's odd that, or coincidental, I suppose, that the new series be on TV. One of their big driving themes is that the aliens, the lizard critters, have set up welfare clinics on the surface of the Earth to heal humans of the various major illnesses like, you know, AIDS and cancer and things like that. And they are preparing, in the series, an injection to be given to the humans who come to their care centers, their clinic, to make them very healthy and you know, immune to various diseases. It's a one-shot-does-all thing. And in essence, it's a shot that's got something in it to either mark or kill everyone that's got the injection. And it just, it plays into the whole scenario of what we're talking about with the injections of the soldiers and stuff. I mean, that's just them. That's not us to start with. But when they get the numbering system in, there's going to be something injected under the skin or injected into the skin and the forehead or the hand. So I keep going back to that B-series is, boy, I tell you what, are they close to the mark of what they're showing there is fiction. And it's so current right now, and it's just a rehash, you know, a remake of the original B-series with modern technology and movie making and whatever. But it is something that they wanted to really enforce right now in a big hurry. So, you know, I feel this year is going to be an interesting year for Discovery Disclosure.
And it seems like everything is ramping up, amping up, accelerating. And it's interesting because, again, remember when we used to hear there was no water on Mars or there was no water on the moon?
Yeah.
And now,
yeah.
Isn't it interesting that, you know, each probably week is safe to say there's some new revelation. I actually talked to a guy who was an astrophysicist at Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And he broke free of there, by the way, a Christian. I don't know where he is now. I couldn't say if he's dead or alive. But he said, Steve, he said, when you see the real pictures of Mars, and by the way, this was confirmed to me by one of America's top double agents who died 6 months ago, about 10 years ago. He said, it's blue skies. He said, it's amazing. He says, everything you see that comes out of NASA and JPL are articulated. And he says, they're absolutely faked to the end degree. He says, when you see this stuff with your real eyes, you'd say, that's it. He said, it's beautiful. And I'm not saying this, but he said, it's also so significant that every time there's a monument, every time there is any indication of intelligent life that was on the planet, there's also an overwhelming sense of warfare, cosmic warfare. And so the fascinating thing, Stan, is that we're now on this Earth soon to experience what we've been lied about Mars and about the other planets and everything. So I think it's fascinating that, again, the timing, if April is significant to the King of Kings, the God of the universe, to let the people know, then I got to tell you, I don't think we're waiting years anymore. It's got to be months away before they make their play, you know?
Yeah,
they make their
too.
Play that the space brethren are here to save us from ourselves.
You know, on that thing about the blue skies on Mars, I'm not sure that I agree with that 100% because when I look through a telescope at the planet Mars, it is red from the outside, and just as Earth is blue from the outside. So I'm not sure that part of what he said was correct unless it was some kind of a special inversion when you're on the surface looking up, it looks blue. But I do know that there are things on Mars, a number of things. I've been studying the high-resolution photos of the areas, a number of areas, but particularly those around Cydonia, and then south of there, okay, into the southern hemisphere. And I found some unusual things, in particular some big spheres, you know, that are about 6 feet in diameter, roughly. They average smaller and larger, but these black spheres are all over the surface in a layer, which is covered with dust. And the layer is only, 20, 30 feet deep, basically around the entire planet. When the surface gets disturbed by an eruption or a meteor impact or something, it spreads these big spheres all out over the ground. And I have not been able to get an answer back from any of the observatories or the analysts about what those really are. If that makes sense. They're certainly not hematite spheres that form in the bottom of an ocean.
Well, and it's interesting because there's parallels to the Olmec spheres, too, on Earth.
Yeah.
O-L-M-E-C, one of the oldest civilizations that they can't even define.
There are some spherical-shaped things that do form in the seabed, naturally. Down in
right.
New Zealand, they have those, and I've seen those. You've seen the photographs of them. But
the Olmec simply, what was interesting, because some of their spheres are almost identical to the diameter of the different planets.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
almost like they're playing bocce ball with the universe.
And with their knowledge of the astronomy and everything back then, I mean, that does fit.
Right. Well, let's go to the part about Daniel, if you get to that too, especially when he won't have regard for women. I mean, people have saying that basically the Antichrist can't be married because he has no desire for women. Explain what that is, because I thought that was probably one of the most amazing things that I'd ever heard.
Well, you know, yeah, I thought that way too, from being taught by other teachers of the Bible and interpreting stuff over the years. And I just accepted that until I started retranslating that portion of Daniel. And to my surprise, the phrase, he shall put himself above all other gods, gives a clue to the next part of the verse, which talks about he has no regard for, no regard for women. I'm just trying to remember exactly how it works. But the Hebrew phrase is al-kal-el, and that's three lamet, al-kal-el, three L's at the end of those things. And I discussed how unusual that particular phrasing is, and that was what kind of started me to thinking there's something poetic or musical or organized about what Daniel's writing here. You know, it's not all as it seems. It's not random. He's very carefully chosen his words. Then I got to that part about the he would have no regard for the God of gods, other gods, and the desire of women. And that was all those three things in one phrase. And I thought, well, now that's odd, because now Daniel's been so specific in the rest of the book, grammatically correct, organizing things exactly, you know, sentences, verbs, nouns, everything in the right place. But here, he starts talking about he put himself above the God of gods, the desire of women, and all other gods. Well, what the heck is the desire of women grammatically got to do in between two God things? All other gods and the God of gods, you know, the ruling God. So then I started to retranslate that center part about the desire of women. And it turns out, not widely known to many people, but back in that time, the Hebrew women all wanted to be the mother of the Messiah of Israel when he came. They didn't necessarily know that he was God, but Daniel did, because he got to talk to him. Now, what that means, the desire of women was the desire of Hebrew women who wanted to be the mother of the Messiah, who, of course, was the Son of God. So then that makes sense when you say he puts himself above the God of God, the Son of God, and all other gods, which were lower than the Son of God. You see what I'm saying? Do you follow that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So that, to me, you know, once I found that, it opened up all kinds of questions about the rest of Daniel, and I tell you, there's more, much more to be found in Daniel using the techniques I've used, but I just didn't want to wait a year to finish translating that, put it in to the book, and then miss the opportunity to tell people about the most important thing to watch for right now. The other stuff is important too, but this is critically important for this year. I tell you, poor old Holly, I'd yell at her across and interrupt whatever she was doing. Look at this, you will not believe this. And couple times she said the hair stood straight out in the back of her neck when I read the translation. She's like, that's just amazing. And it certainly is. You'll see when you read this, those that haven't got the book yet, we'll read that. You'll see what I'm talking about.
And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Stan's book is available only by, he and I do the same thing. We publish make our books available. You need to get The Cosmic Conspiracy because, again, this has been, I would say, this is what, the third edition?
Yes.
And ladies and gentlemen, the only way, and Stan, you give out the orders because I don't want to flood you into the night, but during normal working hours, you can call 719-547-9100, 719-547-9100. And I would just like to address some emails again. This is not Catholic bashing. The Protestants are in on this. The hierarchy is in on this. Even the Catholic prophecies are talking about the true believers within the Catholic Church being persecuted by these other ones. Read Windswept House. Read The Final Conclave. Read and go on coast to coast and listen to Malachi Martin, one of the brightest Catholic theologians' explanation of what's going on. I think, Stan, what's amazing to me is, again, people will revert right back to the basic understanding that, this is my faith that's being attacked. No. What we're trying to say is this is a substitutionary attack on faith by people who are willingly yielding themselves to the Prince of Darkness to get people to follow the Fallen One and all his emissaries when they come to Earth. Is that an easy way to say it?
Yes, and I'm glad you stated that, because it certainly needs to be said that we're not Catholic bashing or Baptist bashing or anything. We're just simply pointing out where these things are turning in the wrong direction now.
So please, everybody, use the R word and relax. So the point is getting back to that the Messiah. Every woman was hopeful that she would be the one to bring forth the Messiah, correct?
Yeah, he was the desire of the Hebrew women.
Right. So the thing is that make it really plain. That so what does it mean when he will not regard? So basically, he just says, I don't care about all that stuff.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. I have no regard, no respect for the God of God, the Son of God, or any other gods that you want to mention. I am, you know, the greatest. It's that old boxer term again there.
Well, you can go on YouTube and see the current president making statements like that. I'm serious. The point is that he will not have no, he will not honor the God of his fathers. So in this book of Daniel, I got to tell you something, and I've said this for all the years, over 37 years, you cannot understand correctly the book of Revelation until you use the time key of Daniel.
Right.
Daniel is kind of like the ultimate time vault for the most amazing stuff that God has yet reserved and reveals it at the time of its unveiling. You know, again, that's why date setting, I've given up on date setting a long time ago. I'm looking at the events to determine the time, not looking for the time of the events. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're looking for the season.
You got it. And there's a reason for the season. And I think that, again, that it's so in our face, Stan. It's so relevant to the times we're speaking about. Listen, all of these people that are out there are planning the biggest, if you will, destruction in the history of mankind, and it's ultimately mankind. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in the second hour to continue on. You're listening to Shadow of the Darkness. We're going to switch over to Survive to Thrive. We'll be back after station identification.